I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I'm the Grant Mountain, Missouri.
And I'm J-Clone 56.
Today, we're going to talk about Weird Science.
Oh, I love that movie.
I don't know this movie.
Weird Science. You never seen it?
No.
It's where two guys create a girl on a computer.
You've told me about this.
They hook her up to like... They hook it up to something, and then she becomes alive, and she tries to help them in their lives and get girlfriends and be cool and popular.
Does it work out?
Yeah, but not like the way you think it does.
She starts dating one of them?
No, she never does.
Oh, okay.
Everyone thinks they are, but they're not. She's just their friend.
Good for her.
Yeah, it's a good movie, Weird Science. So we're not talking about the movie?
No.
Darn.
There's been a couple news articles and weird things that have happened in science this year that we've been getting a lot of emails about. So I just thought we'd do an episode about it.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Just so I don't have to keep answering all these emails.
That's okay. Let's do it.
About the same thing repeatedly.
Right.
First one is the mysterious ship goo.
Okay. This one's new to me.
You don't know the mysterious ship goo?
I don't think so.
It is a completely new life form.
No, I don't know about this.
You don't know about this?
Huh.
You never heard about this?
Was that your Jay Leno? What, have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
That wasn't Jay Leno, but yeah.
Okay.
It came from the deep, a viscous black gunk oozing from the rudder of a ship. This basically happened in August of 2024, but really didn't start making the news until relatively recently.
Okay.
It was a crew of the Great Lakes research vessel.
So I've been our neck of the woods.
Yep. The RV Blue Heron first spotted this odd substance on their boat when they brought it to the Cleveland shipyard for propeller repairs.
Okay.
So they lift it. The ship's really big. It's a research vessel. I've been on a couple of them. I don't think I've ever been on the Blue Heron, but like they do trawls with it and all kinds of stuff. So they lift it out and on the shaft of the propeller.
Okay.
And the rudder itself, there's this thick, sticky black goo.
Okay.
Okay. So what, if you're a ship mechanic, you know some stuff about boats, and you've seen this, what would be your first thought?
Well, it would have to be something that would react with water.
It doesn't react. It's not like dissolving. It's right. Hanging on to the metal.
That's something, if it was something, I would imagine it would have been something from the motor that like leaked out, and that's why I'd say react with the water and maybe congealed. That would be my guess.
Yep, that's a good guess, because that's what they thought.
Okay.
From the onset, no one was quite sure what to make of it. And according to Doug Ricketts, the marine superintendent of the University of Minnesota Duluth, the Large Lake Observatory, which just the head of a big organization that deals with a lot of organisms.
Okay.
The muck looked like thick grease or oil. But the rudder shaft wasn't supposed to be lubricated by anything more than lake water.
Okay.
So when they first see it, they thought what you thought, like, that's got to be like some kind of like engine lubricant,
yeah,
or like some kind of thick
something
lubricant.
Grease, yeah.
Grease. But there's not supposed to be any way that there's grease on it. That's kind of the first thought they had, is that somebody had lubricated a spot that didn't need lubricated.
Yeah.
and it just happened to look really weird.
Okay.
But yeah, it wasn't supposed to be lubricated. Instead of a strong petroleum odor, which, you know, a lot of those lubricants are petroleum based. Yep. So he touches it and he's smelling it, you know, just like, is it oil? I mean, we did it for, you do it for gasoline. It sounds a little weird, but when you see a puddle under your car, you're like, you touch it and then you sniff smell it. Is it gasoline? No, it's water. Thank goodness.
Right. Yep.
So he touched a little bit and sniffed it. The goop had an extremely metallic smell, which she's like, that's bad.
Yeah.
Because first I'm like, well, it's oil's not supposed to be on this thing. And now this oil smells like metal.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
So they're like, ah, that's not good. That there's the, you know, in their head, the ship is like blown to bits inside or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's bad problems happening. But it also didn't leave a sheen on the water. So that, you know, normally petroleum and oil based things leave a little bit of a sheen, even if they're like oil or grease. And they could not burn it.
Okay. This is a very interesting.
So they try to, you know, it's with a blowtorch. They put a little sample on it. We're trying to burn it. Like if it's oil or grease, it'll burn some way.
Yep.
Diesel, like gasoline's explosive. Diesel fuel is generally not explosive, but still quite flammable. Like it'll burn nice and slow.
Mm-hmm.
Anything petroleum based is going to burn. So they're like, well, we got to figure out what this is. So they couldn't get it to burn. So during these informal tests conducted by the captain, Rue Lee. So this, you know, he's doing all these tests in the shipyard, just trying to figure out what this stuff is.
Right. Absolutely.
Can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Goes through all of it. At this point, they're pretty convinced it's not oil or grease.
Okay.
So now they're relieved, but they're even more stupefied. And I mean, this thing is covered in it. It's not like there was a little bit of drip drop here. It's like thick on it.
Right.
So like, well, where did this stuff come from? You know, there's other questions. So they sent a cup. They wanted answers. So Rickett brought a paper coffee cup half filled with a mysterious goo. And it was just labeled ship goo with ship a Sharpie. Goo.
That's great.
So he brought it to the university scientist. Laboratory analysis had prompted more questions than answers. Oh, but once they start putting it under stuff, they're like, we don't know what this is. But initial assessment of the ship goo yielded at least one extremely startling discovery. This mysterious tar-like material contained previously unidentified forms of life. So Cody says, which is one of the scientists, he's a microbiological science. I really don't think we'd get anything, to be honest, when we first did the test. Usually, when you get a cup of tar, you don't expect to find much.
Nothing in there, no.
An odd bacteria here and there. Under this is that assessment, he handed it off to a grad student and said, good luck.
Okay.
So that's what scientists do. When they're like, yeah, this is dumb. Here you go. The grad student, though, successfully extracted a lot of DNA from the goop.
Okay.
Defying Cody's initial assumptions. But still, he thought it might have been a routine sample contamination. He's like, you did it wrong, kid.
Right.
Get out of here. That's only after the lab sent the extracted DNA off to, for the preliminary single gene sequencing that Cody had realized it was completely in uncharted territory with the goo. When the results came back, he was extremely shocked. A lot of the sequences came out really novel. I was like, oh no, okay. This is a whole different story than what we thought. So the ship goo comes back. The grad kid finds like, this is DNA. This is alive.
Right, yeah.
And then he's like, what? Let's send it back. They get it back with a single gene sequencing technology, and it gets all kinds of crazy answers.
And stuff's popping up all over the map.
Yeah, this is weird stuff. What do you think so far?
I'm trying to figure it out still, but okay, so I imagine maybe some kind of new algae or something. I don't know.
Good guess.
Something. What if it's a underwater lichen? Like, no, it can't be that. I don't know. Yeah, I just add an algae. Some bacteria. Could be bacteria.
I always go with bacteria. There's a creature, and I'll tell you, bryozoans is what I would assume it was. They commonly get called freshwater sponges. They're not related. The brains that people catch in lakes.
Okay, yeah.
Are a type of bryozoan.
Uh-huh.
But they have other versions. But they're essentially like big globs of snot.
Right, as opposed to black tar.
Yeah, but that's where I would have been like, okay, it's attached itself to a structure, which bryozoans do in their adult stage.
Uh-huh.
and it's like a big thing of goop. So okay. maybe it's a damaged or a dying bryozoam. It's not normally that color. Gotcha. Whatever. You know, gotcha. That's in my head, that's what where I'd have thrown my guess to.
Yeah.
Some kind of bryozoam or close cousin. So from a deeper look into the ship's goo microbial makeup, Cody and his colleagues sent the samples for a second round of sequencing, you know, a more in-depth look. This time, they examined the whole genome instead of the goo. Instead of a single key genome region, the analysis confirmed that, though the goo's microbes weren't especially diverse, they were completely unique.
Mm.
So there wasn't, the goop's only a couple things
right.
mixed in.
Okay.
But they're all unique.
Okay.
The reconstructions of the genomes of more than 20 microbes, they compared them to comprehensive database of the previously identified organisms. According to Cody, they found several novel archaea, members of the domain of single-celled prokaryotic life.
Okay.
And distinguished from bacteria with the cell membrane composite. That's real simple stuff.
The small, tiny, one single
way,
cell.
Way, way simple.
Yeah.
Even, like, simpler in bacteria.
Was that, like, prokaryotes or something like that?
Yeah, prokaryotic life. Prokaryote. Yeah. One of the microbes, though, was found represented not just a new species, but a completely, entirely new order of archaea.
Wow.
From now, the scientists are officially referring to this as Ship Goo 1.
Because of the cup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that scientific name in the catalog is Ship, capital S, capital G, Goo 01.
Wow. Styrofoam cup.
Another promising oddball microbe that the whole new bacterial phylum.
Okay. So we're branching off a whole new branch on the tree.
Mm-hmm. Cody says, it's if confirmed, this would probably, you know, be characterized as Ship Goo 002.
Is this the origin story of the new Venom movie?
It does look like Venom, if you look at pictures.
Oh, great. Here we go.
Others, too, might be proved to be new to science. There are so many interesting things in this goo. There are several more of them that have new genus, at least. Maybe new families. We're not for sure.
Do you think this is something that was just something previously undiscovered?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Because why? Why now?
Yeah, exactly.
Why is it on a ship? Why is it on the rudder and the shaft of a ship's propeller? Why now? Because there's millions of ships on Lake Erie, you know, through the years on the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
And there's they go dry dock constantly. Somebody would have seen this stuff.
Right.
Okay. So Ship Goo 01 seems to be anaerobic, meaning it prefers oxygen-free environments, which is odd for where it was. Other microbes in the goo seem to be gobbling oxygen up, which Cody suggests is possible the existence in a mutual beneficial balance, that they grow in clusters.
With each other.
Because the anaerobic doesn't want oxygen, but this other group gobbles it all up, so if they hook them together, they're eating on the oxygen, keeping them safe.
Gotcha.
Because a lot of people may not realize this, there's a lot of life that oxygen is extremely toxic to. It's a very, very deadly gas. And if you believe in the whole theory of evolution with early life,
yeah,
oxygen was very, very deadly to those organisms. And okay. then we still have anaerobic organisms today that oxygen is extremely detrimental to.
Can you, just like one for example you got off the top
it's
of your
just
head?
A lot of anaerobic bacteria.
Okay, just I mean, stuff
they don't
like
have
that.
Common names.
Well, I didn't know if it was like some like weird, I don't know, dog.
No. Nothing
I'm
you can see.
Right. Okay, fair enough.
Is, I don't know. Technically, maybe some of the deep sea thermal vent things, but I still think they respirate with oxygen.
That's still very hyper specific. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah. So building a 1,000-piece puzzle without any pictures or guides.
Yeah, that should be fun.
So of the more familiar microbes in genetic makeups, the database indicates that the bulk of these teeny tiny organisms are similar to those associated with.
I don't know.
So, there's a lot of things in here. There's a couple really special ones, but there's a lot of things in this goo. It's like a colony of different organisms.
Okay.
The majority, the bulk of the mass, comes from these organisms that are found only in oil wells, tar pits, and hydrocarbon systems.
Oh, okay.
Oil eaters.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so what's new in the Great Lakes system that's...
So several seem to be related to microorganisms with international origins from places like Germany. there's been kind of fun trying to figure what Cody says. There's been kind of fun trying to figure out why the rudder system here is becoming quite baffling. In part, again, because the Blue Heron's rudder isn't regularly greased up with oil. They've never put oil on the thing.
Right.
So why are all these oil-eating bacteria hanging on here? Or they're only found in hydrocarbon systems. They're found in oil, tar pits. Why now? Why here?
I don't know. Is the motor manufacturer's getting a...
The ship's been around for a long time. It's okay. Not a brand new ship. Like,
okay.
It's been serviced many times.
Okay. I don't know. Dang it.
The ship hasn't always, though, been in the Minnesota's custody. It was purchased pre-owned in 1997. Cody says, so it's entirely possible that the prior owners of the vessel did apply some cyanide petroleum-based lubricants to the rudder and shaft, but we never have since 1997. But generally, microbes need a steady food supply of these compounds. Without the additional influx of grease over 25 years, it's been hard to know whether the whale or the oil-associated microbes might be eating after all this time. And I highly suggest everybody looks at it. This is a picture of it after a bunch of it's been scraped off.
Wow.
But if you look at the top, you can see where it was still like clumped on.
It does. It looks like
it looks like black grease.
Yeah, it looks like grease. Just typical black grease just smeared on there.
It's a living thing.
Hmm.
Perhaps they're just staining off the metal itself, Cody thought, noting the rudder shaft didn't look particularly damaged, though. There is several groups of bacteria and even anaerobic things that eat metal.
Yeah.
But they expect more damage. You know, there's not really, it's not any...
It's not damaging the motor.
More wear and tear than what you would expect.
Gotcha.
Maybe organic matter from the lake water is feeding these microbeasts is another thought. That there's so many oils and petroleums in the water itself that it's sustaining this colony.
Which that I could see.
I don't really think so.
Okay.
As for with these organisms... Mm. These are like tar pit, oil pit.
Like literally living in oil.
They live in sometimes boiling oil.
Mm.
So that's a lot of food. And there is oil and stuff. Oil, a lot of petroleum doesn't like mixing with water.
Right.
So even if it's in the lake, it's on the surface.
Yep.
So these guys are hanging well low below the water level.
So that don't make no sense.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of mystery. Maybe there's a secret third thing that they're going on. The more we start getting into this, the more kind of clueless we are here, says Cody. We're doing a lot of sleuthing trying to figure out what these things are. He's hoping to get better answers when the microbes are floating around in and around the microbe melobotic pathways present in the goop. Cody also imagines using chemical isotope analysis down the line to establish where the atoms in the system are coming from.
Mm.
The carbon and the nitrogen in algae, for instance, has a very different profile from equivalent molecules in motor lubricant.
Okay.
So they're hoping that these really high-end expensive tests will tell them in the guts of these tiny things what they're eating.
Gotcha.
Maybe they're not eating lubricants or oils at all. They happen to be related to those families.
Isn't that nuts? We have technology that can look in the guts of like single-celled organisms. Mm-hmm.
And he says this, it's like a 1,000-piece puzzle with no picture.
Mm-hmm.
Cody also says, one more image becomes clear. The lab plans to publish their findings in a peer-review study here very soon. I don't think that's come out quite yet.
Okay. I'm very interested, though. We'll have to put a tab in this one or a pen. Oh,
I still have more in this article for you.
I mean, when those results come out.
Yeah. Peer-review process takes forever. But there is one big challenge that scientists might not be able to overcome. The cup of goo, comprising of about 100 milliliters of the junk, was the only sample taken.
Okay.
And it's getting more, or what's getting more could be completely difficult.
Okay.
Or impossible. The ship has been put, you know, in dry dock with the rudder once again disassembled. And unfortunately, they did a really good job of cleaning it last time because when they put it back, the rest of the goo may be lost forever.
Okay. It never came back on the ship?
Nope.
Okay.
No other ship's ever seen this stuff. It's never been reported before.
It was just this one?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
With a collection of organisms from around the world in extremely different environments with so many questions of why they're there.
Hmm. Petroleum flies carried them there.
I mean, that would be not asinine. I don't know where a petroleum fly colony would be closest to the Great Lakes. I mean, it's would take it'd be extraordinary, but not impossible, right?
Right, yeah. And then for that to establish in the lake.
And to hit, yeah, I don't know. It would be a lot, but not impossible. Nothing's impossible. But
right.
It would be a lot. But some scientists think maybe not. I don't think this ship is unique. I really strongly suspect that if you took the rudder post off a ship anywhere, there's possible finding some organisms, maybe new organisms, in that space, Cody says. Before this, we would have easily him imagining, you know, strange microorganisms popping up on the ship galley or on the fuel filter. But the place seemed to be found like that, with mechanical rubber shafts, far end of the ship, almost the weirdest place it could be. You know, there are microbes everywhere on these ships, eating oil and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Inside. This is just weird that it's outside. But yeah, so that's been the goo. Nobody knows.
Ship goo.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we get some answers in the future and figure out what this stuff actually was.
All we know is that we don't have species, but we have families. One of the microbes, you know, his family is notorious for hydrocarbon pools.
Right.
That's yes. Oil, petroleum, tar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the extremophiles that eat that stuff.
Right, exactly.
So there's, but there's always oddballs in every family. And mm-hmm. I mean this in the scientific family trees.
Right.
Where there's somebody that goes against the grain. So just because they're in that family doesn't mean they have to be eating petroleum or exclusively eating petroleum.
Correct.
So there's always that chance that this bacteria got on here from like an oil filter, you know, where it's when they're normally eating oil, got, you know, mixed up with this other group, this colony, yeah. And had to figure out something else to eat.
Oof. Or what if it's something more nefarious? What if something was dropped in the water from a foreign, entity?
Well, there's so many other things in here, like the anaerobic that hates oxygen. And the oxygen eaters that are in the goo. This is just seems like, and it could be a 1 in a million coincidence that these 3 or 4 or 10 organisms
found each other,
were in a clump of somewhere together.
Yeah.
Formed on this thing one time.
Yeah.
And got scrubbed off.
Hmm. Like it was a one time. Yeah. What if it was just like how the eels all meet for to reproduce?
I think it may be even rarer than that.
Yeah.
Where it's just happened to be that in a shipyard somewhere. All these things that, you know, there was a coal harvester. Mm. There was this, you know, and there was just some really polluted spot of water that had a lack of oxygen enough and enough petroleum to keep a colony of various things just hooked together. And then the ship rudder went through it, so it just stuck onto the ship rudder.
Collected it, yep.
And then it's just been growing there for, you know, a couple of years before it got dry docked again.
Yeah.
Scrubbed it off and that was it.
That's nuts.
And just because they're new to science, I want to make a, because that is, it's very exciting and it's very cool. When we talk about microbes, everything's new to science.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand, everybody at home, do you understand how many species
of microbes
there are? It's indefinite, impossible. It's an incalculable number.
Okay.
The weird thing with this is there were so many here. At one time, that is weird. And the families that they belong to are weird.
Mm-hmm.
To be all colluded together. Mm. So it's not that a new species of, you know, of goop was found. There's new species of goop found all the time.
What if that's the goop they use to, like, you know, create these monsters and these abominations in labs? The goop's like the building block, you know, the medium. And then they inject other DNA to make the creature. Dogman, you got this.
There was another thought that this was actually some kind of spawn.
Like fish spawn?
Not quite fish.
Okay.
You know, something much smaller.
Some animal spawn.
Some kind of creature.
Mm.
And then these other organisms are either nest parasites or something like that. Or they were just on the parents. Let's say it's a deep ocean species where there may be actual petroleum vents down there. But they come up to spawn, or I don't know. I mean, we've talked about tuna eggs, but there are a lot of animals that will actually spawn, and it'll look like an oil sheen on the water.
Mm.
There's a bunch of fish that do this, where they have, you know, for their body size, millions and millions of eggs.
Yeah.
They're just tiny eggs.
Yeah.
And they'll float on the water, and they look like a big, like a sheen.
Mm.
So there's always that they're just parents, like swordfish, for example. We've never witnessed this behavior. This is anecdotal. But swordfish, when they're caught by commercial fishermen, when they go to get, you know, cleaned and cut up and all that, mm-hmm. they're very muddy.
Okay.
They're not near mud. So these sword fishermen say that they rub on the bottom, or they're eating something down in the mud on the, like, thousands of feet down. Because he was showing, there's videos you can find where they're spraying them off and scrubbing. They scrub swordfish with a broom.
Yeah.
Because they're so muddy on their skin.
Oh, wow.
They're holding so much mud. Whether it may be parasite cleanse, it may be that they're trying to spook stuff out of the mud to eat.
Right, yeah.
They may enjoy it. You know, they just, huh. maybe a plaything.
Who would have thought that, though?
So that's what I'm saying is, what if there's a species that happens to spawn near the surface, mm-hmm. but lives thousands of feet below, mm-hmm. rubbing in the mud near a hydrocarbon, you know, sump somewhere.
Then came up and mixed with the, mm-hmm. yeah.
So this, we've never sampled this species because it's impossible.
Right, exactly.
And fish just brought it up. So they're not weird. You know, it's a collection of stuff, like, it's from Germany, some it's from here.
Huh.
Well, to them it's not weird because it's the bottom of the ocean where everything collects.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
I don't know. And then there's tons of anaerobic stuff down in the bottom of the ocean.
It is an odd mystery, or new mystery, I guess.
There's a lot of questions. And I'm very excited to see if they do the gut analysis, just to see what those things are eating.
Yeah.
Just to see where those molecules came from.
No, I'm invested.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see where it goes. But that's the first one. Maybe we'll take our ad break a little early, and before we get into more weird science.
All right, I could use some lunch.
Well, why don't you talk about fishing?
Oh, fishing. Future anglers of Indian Lake of Ohio. You know, go out and take a kid fishing. They do a lot of donations and works with equipment and things kids need to, you know, go out in their first time if you don't have the means to provide for them. So, yeah, go outside, get your kids outdoors, take them fishing. Future Anglers of Indian Lake, Ohio. Go check them out and give them some part of your time.
Suey! I got me this hot, fresh squonk steak, but man, it tastes bad. Jay, you got anything to fix this up?
I think you need some seasoning on that squonk fixer up.
Well, what do you got?
How about you try this right here? It's called Bigfoot Breath. Raw garlic seasoning made from fresh garlic.
Give me that. Sure. Well, it did make it taste a lot better. Jeez.
Brought that squonk right alive, didn't it?
You know, I'm going to have to kill more squonks to use more of this seasoning.
Oh, how about you try this instead? How about you try my spicy garlic seasoning?
Oh, give it here. Suey! That's good stuff.
Spicy, but not too spicy.
That's perfect. Where can you get these delicacies?
Oh, you can find these on flavorsforest.com. This is our newest spice that just been created, and it's from Flavors of the Forest.
Make sure you all get some at the links down below. We'll catch you. Suey!
Ah. Squonk.
Yes. Squonk.
So you guys, the Squonkapalooza actually are either last weekend or this weekend.
Yeah, we're presenting. We actually did a presentation over the brand new book.
Ooh, A to Z Cryptids, my first cryptid encyclopedia.
Yes.
Which is available on Amazon or on the website, depending on where you're at.
Yeah, checking the links in the description below.
If you want it signed, you got to get it on thecryptidsofcorn.com. If you want it with a little bit cheaper shipping, go to Amazon.
Yes, but yes.
Do whatever you have to do. It doesn't bother me either way.
A to Z Cryptids, my first cryptid encyclopedia.
Yep, check it out. Leave a 5-star review on Amazon if you could, even if you don't buy it from Amazon.
Yeah,
it greatly helps.
It just helps.
All right, a new creature has occurred on the planet.
Ooh.
With a third state of being beyond life and death.
Okay.
So we're going to kind of get into, like, part, I think this would be the third one we've done, like, man-made horrors beyond our comprehension.
Oh, boy. Okay. This is a man-made one?
We'll get there.
Okay. Let's find out.
Life and death are traditionally viewed as...
Beginning and end?
Opposites.
Okay. There you go.
But the enigma of multicellular life forms from the cells of dead organisms introduced a new third state that lies beyond traditional boundaries of life and death.
Limbo?
Mm-hmm. Usually science considered death to be pretty much irreversible, is a halt of the functions of an organism. If you actually look up the definition in some biological textbooks, mm-hmm. that is, it's the irreversible halt of an organism's biological functions.
Makes sense. Your brain stops, heart stops.
Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, the irreversible is another part of it.
Right, yeah. It doesn't come back on.
Because there are, like, there's some ice fish that literally freeze and they stop everything. They freeze solid in, you know, the Antarctic ice sheet.
Oh, but then they can snap back to it.
Yeah, when they thaw. Right. But so there's no biological functioning happening.
Understood.
But it is reversible.
Mm-hmm.
So, but these organisms have introduced the third state. However, practices such as organ donation highlight how organisms, tissues, and cells can continue to function even after an organism's demise.
Okay.
So this has been a kind of a thought for a while in the back of a lot of, you know, scientists that care about this kind of things, you know, mind that, well, what's happening there? Like, mm-hmm. is that, are you dead then? Are you dead? If you donate, and I think organ donation is an amazing thing. And it, the people that are that unselfish to do that after they die are amazing people.
Mm.
I never have it marked on my card because I don't trust the government.
Yeah, exactly. It's...
But Emily, my wife, knows that if I am in that situation, please go ahead.
Yeah.
If a kid or, you know, whoever can benefit from my body, it's not me anymore at that point, you know, let him benefit. But I will never have it marked on my license.
And maybe we can discuss that on a...
We'll send it over to the DW guys.
DW guys.
But that's a question, though. Are you dead then? If you donate your liver, you donate your heart, you donate a piece of mm-hmm. your brain, your eyes, your optic nerves.
Right, yeah.
Are you dead?
Right. That's a good question. There's a story of that woman that had the heart transplant. Never liked peanut butter, but after she got her new heart, she craved peanut butter. Turns out the lady that whose heart it was loved peanut butter.
There's a really emotional video where this guy is sitting. He got a heart transplant from a young man.
Mm-hmm.
You've probably seen the video. Everybody else has probably seen it, but I'll tell it real quick. Got a heart transplant from a young man. He's sitting in the restaurant, and it's like the anniversary of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a picture of the kid. He honors the kid, you know, took all that. Because he was like a 21-year-old that got hit by a drunk driver kind of thing.
Yeah.
And these people, he's sitting next to him. And he's like, they're like, well, you know, they're talking, asking what they're celebrating, this couple. And he's like, well, what, you know, where was he from? His name is Jacob. And they're like, oh, we had a son named Jacob. Like, well, where is he from? Blah, blah, blah. And like, we're from blah, blah. It was the kid's parents.
Wow. What are the
odds? It was a setup. No, it was a setup. Like, the wife had organized it.
Oh, okay.
And they were hugging and just, you know, saying it. He was extremely thankful, obviously.
Really? Well,
yeah. But they were very thankful that.
He was benefiting.
Somebody, you know, benefited, you know, from their tragedy.
Yes.
It was just a nice thing. So is he still alive or not?
You know, in some way, yeah.
It's a question I can't answer.
Right, yeah.
And I don't think any real human could answer.
Well, I guess who is...
What's alive?
What's he?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of what ifs in that sense.
There's a lot.
Question, yeah.
It's a big question.
Loaded.
So, yeah. So this resilience raises the question, what mechanisms allow certain cells to keep moving after an organism has died?
Mm-hmm.
What biological process would even give you... Why? Why does a liver keep trying to do things after you're dead?
Right,
there's no point to it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're researching who investigate what happens to organisms after they die. They publish some of these studies. They decide certain cells they provide with nutrients, oxygen, bioelectricity, and other biochemical cues have the capacity to transmit into multicellular organisms with a new function after death. The life, death, and the emergence of something new. The third state challenges how scientists typically understand cell behavior. While caterpillars metamorphosize into butterflies or tadpoles, change into frogs, many may be familiar with developmental transformations. There are a few instances where organisms change in the ways that are not predetermined.
Okay.
So, like, for example, with that, that's a big sentence. I'll try to simplify it. Basically, when a caterpillar goes into its cocoon, you know, they melt down, right?
Right, yeah.
They completely turn to goop.
Mm-hmm.
And then they reemerge as a butterfly.
That's so wild.
But you know it's going to be a butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be an odd thing. It's not, you know, a beetle's not going to come out, or a frog's not going to come out.
Like a surprise each time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even though it does have an extreme metabolic, you know, change,
mm-hmm.
it's a determined outcome.
Right, yeah.
So there are things that don't have that. So tumors, organoids, and cells, or cell lines, can be indefinitely divided in a petri dish. like HeLa cells are not considered part of the third state of matter or third state of being because they do not develop new functions.
Okay.
So like you know, they have like the lung tissue cells that they took in like the 60s.
Yeah.
And they're still growing them, right?
MRC15, whatever they are, something yeah. like that.
But you know, that's still, but it's not, that's not a third, they don't consider that the third state of being because it's not new. It's just cloning itself.
Yeah, yeah.
However, researchers found skin cells extracted from deceased frog embryos were able to adapt to completely new conditions of the petri dish in the lab. And they spontaneously reorganized into multicellular organisms that they have deemed exobots.
Wow.
So we kind of talked about this when it first happened in our man-made horrors beyond comprehension, the first one. It's since developed quite far. So exobots are able to perform kinetic self-replication, meaning that they can physically replicate their structures and functions without growing.
And where do these cells come from?
Frog embryo.
The frog, you're right. Okay, the frog, deceased frog embryo, right?
They scraped it off of a frog. Yeah, okay. Deceased frog embryo, put it in a petri dish.
And it started a new function.
They were just trying to keep the cells going.
Yeah.
And it just started doing its own thing.
And it was adapting to its environment. Yes. Its new environment.
Yes.
Wow.
Skin cells.
Okay.
So it physically replicates its structures and functions by growing, or without growing, sorry. This differs from more common replication processes that involve growing within or on the organism's body. You know, we're talking about budding, spores, mm-hmm. you know, and then humans, you know, an internal fetus. They don't do any of that. Exobots are able... Oh, did I read that? Yeah, sorry. Researchers have also found that a solitary human lung cell can self-assemble into multicellular organisms that are moving around.
Oh, boy.
So they took a human, like, individual human lung cells, put them in a thing. They reconnected and started making a body.
Now, is this what they did with that strain? Because I know that one specific strain that used to be in, like, the things you inject yourself with as a baby.
No, because this is not what they did with those.
Okay.
This is a little bit of a different thing. I'm not saying it's right, but it's a little bit of a different thing.
Yeah, because I know that was human lung tissue from an embryo.
I don't, they didn't say where they got the human lung tissue cells from. These are called arthrobots, and they behave in new structured ways. They are not only able to navigate in their surroundings, but they also repair both themselves and injured neuron cells placed nearby.
Oh, wow.
Taken together, these findings demonstrate the inherent plasticity of cellular structure and challenge the idea that cells and organisms can evolve only in predetermined ways.
Hmm.
The third state suggests organisms' death may play a significant role in how life transforms over time.
Oh, okay.
So this is completely, if you believe in the theory of evolution, this is completely rewriting that.
Yeah, it makes it
It's breaking it apart.
Yep, because...
And this, to me, would be more accurate, because if you look at traditional theory of evolution, which I do not subscribe to, I do believe species adapt over time. I've made that, you know, assessment many, many times on the show. The theory of evolution as a whole, I think, is fundamentally wrong. Charles Darwin even regretted it towards the end of his life. This would be more in line with what I kind of think was very, very spontaneous, rapid, what you would call adaptation.
Okay.
Species radiation. Mm. This plasticity is even to the cells, not defined to an organism as a large whole, where it's behavior plasticity.
It's down to its individual cell work. It's
down to its individual cells or plastic or plasticity, where they can change extremely quickly.
There you go, yes.
Species can modify into new species or new versions of themselves extremely quickly.
See, and aren't all those features within them already? They're just like whether they're turned on or off?
Now.
Or is that another question?
That's a different question.
Okay.
This is completely new structures. So No. I mean, or no, yes.
Or could it be like old structures that have been gone, but they're still in there, but they I guess.
As far as I know, with my very limited understanding, no.
Okay.
These are completely new things that we're seeing for the first time.
Okay.
But I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm not,
right.
You know, I don't specialize in cell division. But from my reading and my understanding, no. These are new things that are being seen for the first time, which completely changes our thoughts on DNA. So you're talking about kind of the old thoughts that DNA holds every piece of information an organism ever in the evolutionary tree.
Yep.
And I do not believe that.
Okay.
I think there are large groups of information that are shared across organisms because it's largely the same. But this is, we talked about this with a consciousness episode we've done a couple times,
mm-hmm.
where consciousness is not, it is shared across the cells. It's not in your brain. It's right. not, and then, you know, levels of consciousness in animals and stuff like that. So this is taking that step even further. I'm not saying these cells, these individual cells are conscious, but these lung tissue cells nearby, not connected, nearby damaged nerve cells from the same species go over and fix it and add it to its group.
So wouldn't that be like a fetus cells when they talked about, remember that was in the 2000s, that was a big thing using like a fetal cells to like repair.
Yeah.
Is that essentially kind of the same, what's the same function?
Yes. Okay. And why that's so important or for that time is because it's like an axolotl, the salamander.
Yes.
Where every cell is undetermined.
Right.
So a lung tissue cell, or on the basic, even beyond that, skeletal tissue cells can only ever be skeletal tissue cells.
Right.
Muscle tissue cells may be able to change a little bit, but there are only ever going to be muscle tissue cells.
Cells,
man.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So why they were using that kind of stuff is because they're still plastic. Okay. They can be anything. They're undetermined.
So these things are skin, or let's just, for the example, they're a lung cell starting. You put them near other cells, and then they kind of change and function as those cells, or with those cells, yeah.
But we've only seen it in the same species so far.
Okay.
So it's still a human neuron cell.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, that's a piece part of me.
Yeah.
Let me go fix it, and I'll hold on to it.
Cool.
There's a lot of new science here.
Yeah.
I guess I'll ruin the end of it. this is all a lot of guesswork right now. It's the brand new field. It's brand new understanding. They know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
All this stuff we're kind of going, the observations are true and correct. The understanding behind them.
Right.
And this is a thing I've preached on this show for years now. Science doesn't know anything.
Mm.
What science is really good at is cause and effect without the math in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And they make up the math in the middle to make the answer right.
Right. That's the algebra, basically.
Yeah, that's the laws of physics.
We're solving for X.
Yeah, when you do this, this happens, so this is the math that happens mm-hmm. in it. Einstein talked about it a whole bunch, how it's just guesswork, for the math in the middle. That's why he never cared about math. It's because it's pointless as far as what he was doing with, you know, physics and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
because it's the cause and effect. The math in between is just for people to feel like we understand it.
Right, yeah.
To make it not magic.
To put it on paper.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then it changes. You know, there's things that break the laws of physics all the time. A double slit. Well, you've done it a bunch.
A pistol shrimp. I mean, come on. There's plenty of things in nature and beyond that break the laws of physics.
But yeah, I mean, there's a ton on this. They're using it, trying to get it into medicine and all this stuff.
Mm.
They're doing some really, really, really weird experiments with this now.
As they always do.
Yeah, and some of the names associated with this have been associated with probably very other poor experiments.
Like?
I'm not going to name them because I don't want to die.
Individual
people? Yeah, people.
Like Anthony?
No.
Okay.
No, that name's actually not on here.
Oh, good, for once.
But yeah, I mean, what do you think of this? And there's more to this. We're not going to get into it right now, but yeah.
I can see the positive and the negative of both of sure. this, of where it can go down. And it's just the people who kind of control what this technology, or what we figure out, what technology we can create from these observations and further pursue them. We can do, it sounds like some amazing things with it. And it sounds like we can also do some pretty nefarious things with it. It just it depends which way you want to steer the ship.
I know, like, a big thought is having, like, things to repair things.
Right, yeah. Well, I could see it with, like, well, you just said, for example, neuron repair, like, whatever whatever is causing the Alzheimer's, dementia, or things like that, if that can repair some of that stuff.
Eat some lion's mane mushroom.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a way. And we still don't know the cause of Alzheimer's, dementia.
I think we're still the only country in the U.S. or in the world calling it dementia.
Oh, really?
Because it's like type 3 diabetes. 3
diabetes, that's what I've been
hearing. Is it Alzheimer's or dementia?
I can't remember.
As a person, I worked with a lot of Alzheimer's and dementia patients. Yeah. My grandpa supposedly had, and he had some issues. I think it was Alzheimer's. Grandpa Ray had.
It's Alzheimer's, you just can't remember.
Like, no, there's some, just, I mean, there gaps. There's other things associated with it. And once again, I'm not an expert. Yeah, I get the two mixed up.
Yeah.
Aggression, heightened aggression is a big associated with one of them because they get confused and they get angry.
Yeah.
Like, I worked in an assisted living facility with a lot of people that had that condition. It should not have been in an assisted living facility. It should have been a more intensive care facility.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they teach you is don't tell them they're wrong. You know, you divert.
Move
it off.
Yeah,
because you're like, well, where's my cat?
Yeah.
You don't have a cat.
Right.
What? No, I have a cat.
Right.
I mean, if your brain, you have a pet cat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a person in your house you do not know.
Telling you you
don't have a pet cat. You're going to freak out.
Yeah.
We'll find him. We'll find him. He's around here. You know, he's probably playing with the kids down there. You just say stuff like, it's lying to him and you kind of feel bad for it, but it comforts him and like, oh, you know, he loves kids. He's down there playing with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, let's go to dinner.
Right, yeah.
That kind of thing. I can't remember which one that is, and I'm sure we'll get lit up in the comments for it.
But yeah, no, this should be... I mean, it's encouraging that this something like that could actually potentially have an answer for. It's just the problem is we still need to find the cause to those things.
I'm a big believer that's just deficiency.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So I've been doing a lot of stuff into protein research.
Uh-huh.
I think there's 13 or 14 proteins. So like, and there's nothing against veganism.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be vegan, it's either animal rights or diet or whatever.
Yeah.
You're great for you.
And, there's protein in plants. You can get a well-rounded diet.
The problem is you have to really watch it. Why they have a lot of protein issues is because it's a little bit of misinformation.
Okay.
From like some of the hyper vegan organizations.
Gotcha.
To themselves. To people that are just trying to be vegan for whatever reason they believe.
Mm.
That you with micronutrients, you have to have all of them or none of them matter.
Oh, okay.
So what you have to have all, there's a difference between a complete protein.
Yes. Existence.
Yeah. Cause it's not functional material then.
Right.
Cause there's a lot of stuff our body can't manufacture.
Okay.
That it needs to take in from other organisms, whether it's plants or animals.
Okay.
But us being omnivores by nature,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of those certain things that we have to get from meat.
Okay.
So if you're vegan, not vegetarian or, you know, the pescatarian or whatever, if you're vegan, just look out for that. You know, look into that. Do your own research, please. Because that's why a lot of the quote unquote vegan influencers look so unhealthy is because they're not getting those nutrients. So the protein they're taking in is not being utilized.
Yeah.
Because you can do a balanced diet with it. You just got to add certain things.
You know, at the end of the day,
just take care of yourself.
Well, yeah, and that you can. There's such that wide range. You can have the extreme, you know, vegan, or you can have the extreme carnivore diet, or you can have the everything extreme sugar diet. People are still alive and can live.
You can live for a long. I'm just
for a long time. Yeah,
that it is an important thing I've been looking into more.
Absolutely,
for complete nutrients.
Yeah,
and the same thing like you said, hyper carnivore diet.
Yeah, I mean
that you're missing stuff too.
Absolutely,
that's more closely to what I am.
Yeah.
And I'm missing certain things.
Yeah.
Because my diet.
It's just that there's such a wide range, and just being conscious of it, even slightly, of what you're taking in, it can just be beneficial long term. Just being aware a little bit, just what goes into your body, because you are what you eat at the end of the day. And I never used to understand that as a kid. I'm like, I am not a burrito. I had never got it, but. As I'm older, like, oh, you're literally, it makes up all of these cells in your body.
Ready for some more weird science?
Yeah, weird
So these science. Are a lot smaller, these two, because just for time, I got a handful of little ones from this past year.
Okay.
The ink that can change shape, and I'll let you tell me whether this is a man-made, all these, though, are going to go through real quick. if they're man-made horrors or good ideas.
Okay.
So imagine ink that can go through from stiff and rigid to soft and bendy just by warming it up. The extending the scientists cooked up this year, they call it the shape-shifting electromatic ink. It is made up of special metal called gallium.
Okay. It's really soft metal.
It's liquid at room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Or right.
Or at
right
hand temperature or something like
above
that.
Above room temperature.
Yeah.
At first, picture, you know, your favorite hoodie printed with ink. One day, you know, on the cold day, it stays stiff to protect you from the elements. On a warm day, it pretty much like melts and is all comfy and soft and allows air to go through it.
It sounds nice, but isn't gallium toxic?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think it's toxic to touch. Gallium is like the liquid, the one you can hold.
Right, right. But I think long-term exposure, though.
Yeah, I think it's slightly radioactive.
Okay. I don't know.
But yeah, so that's the first one.
Yeah, I don't know. That's probably not, it probably looks cool, but it's probably not a good thing to be mass producing at all. It's an abomination.
Mm. Next one, a new force of nature, CERN's mystery.
Hmm.
Remember the four fundamental forces you learned about in school? Do you remember them?
What, solids?
No, not states of matter. Fundamental forces.
Oh, fundamental forces?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
gravity is one of them.
Okay. Inertia?
That's a good guess. So it would be gravity, electromagnetism.
Okay.
Strong and weak nuclear force.
The first two are the same.
They can be, depending on your definitions.
Okay.
So
what's the new one?
Sorry, you made me laugh. Well, this year, some physicists at CERN spotted something strange, an anomaly hitting at possible a fifth force that they may or may not have created.
Is it the Higgs boson force of...
If it sounds like the plot of a horror movie, you're not very far off. The implications could shake up everything we know about the universe. CERN scientists, cosmic detectors... CERN really hasn't said what it is, but they just have pretty much said that we've detected a fifth force of nature.
And it said, but
there's not a lot of information.
You. Well, what is it?
Probably demons.
So there's, okay.
It's CERN.
I know. It's concerning. They're making these claims and then, but we just can't tell you what it is though. It's not, this is probably all made up nonsense. They're setting something up. Something's coming, I'm sure. Is all this is. Mm-hmm. They're setting something up. This is laying the groundwork.
Your way to movement. Brain-computer interfaces, which are called BCIs, are no longer just a far-off futuristic fantasy. In 2025, they hit the major milestone. People with paralysis regained movement using home-use devices that read their brain signals and translate it into commands for them.
Mm.
Imagine wanting to pick up a cup of coffee and your brain just tells your hand to do it. Without any wiring or intensive surgery. For people who have lost control of their limbs, this isn't just science. This is a second chance at independence mm-hmm. and a full life. So, yeah. These are short ones.
Yeah.
Like, you could look into more of these anyway.
It's like Wi-Fi to your limbs.
Yeah. So, BCIs are kind of scary because this is like what Elon talked about years and years ago about putting that interface into your brain.
Yeah.
You have to lay on this needle to charge it. You remember that?
Like in the Matrix?
Yeah. Well, it's on the side.
Oh, okay.
Not in the back.
Oh, okay. Big difference. All
right. I'm like, I roll.
Right. Yeah. If we rip it right out.
But no, this is amazing. And they're talking about it. It's had some positive tests where arms and legs for people like with paralysis.
That's pretty awesome.
Because this is more talking about to either spinal or nerve damage.
Mm-hmm.
That's not allowing you to control anymore. So the muscles are still intact.
Mm-hmm.
This is more for that kind of situation. It doesn't work for all of it.
Yeah.
Like all paralysis. It won't cure all paralysis.
Yeah.
But specifically those spinal injuries and stuff like that. It can if the muscles are still intact because you're just basically bypassing your spinal cord or
right.
your nerve system.
Going directly to it.
Yeah.
Like
it is amazing.
It's Wi-Fi.
This is what science is supposed to be used for.
Yeah. The good stuff. This is the good side of the sword.
So is that a man-made horror or a
no.
good thing?
Well, I think it's a great thing. And look how they frame it in the article. Like using it for the good. The function of providing good to people.
Mm-hmm.
They do not mention the fact that, oh yeah, we can hook these up to like people and turn them into super soldiers.
No,
and
they
do like
they mention that. So this they say right here.
Yeah,
basically, this can allow prisoners to work out their work time in safe confinement. So you can trust prisoners to start working in factories and stuff like that.
So you're controlling their body movements?
Yeah, basically, they're organic robots.
Oh, man.
I made that up.
Well, you're probably not far off, though. No, they just... Oh, I don't know what they would do.
Okay, my last one.
Horrible.
Batteries that might outlast our lifetime.
Okay.
Here's something that sounds almost too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
A neutron-powered battery.
Okay.
They are still mostly theoretical, though, but could one day power devices for decades or even millennia without needing a charge.
This is the Rick and Morty battery.
Yeah, the universe in the battery.
Yes, a neutron. I mean, it's a, yes.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. I mean, there's more to it. You can look into any of this stuff.
I'm sure those already exist. I think we already have those. I'm sure our government institutions and our, higher ups, people that we don't know their names, have these things that power everything that they use. I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure we already got this tech.
I mean, they don't do anything bad.
I know.
The battery is not a bad thing.
No, I think it's great. No, I really think we have it already. Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. And I think
what it's used for.
It could change society. Imagine just, I don't know. It's just ridiculous that these things, these things, we're just on the precipice of having them exist. They're going to dangle that carrot in front of us our entire lives.
It's like a radar, right? They didn't let radar out until, I think it was, now I may be wrong, not a history buff. I think it was China was also started using it, and they're like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, we've already got
it. U.S. government.
We've had this for 60 years. Here you go.
I think it was 30, they said, but yeah.
Whatever. Same difference, yeah.
Like, it's lots of tactical advantage, so here we can start making money off it.
Yeah, because that's what, at the end of the day, a lot of the stuff revolves around money. Follow the money.
Like, what did we get from that crash UFO? Velcro, CDs. There was a lot of stuff that we got from the Roswell crash.
We need another airdrop like that. That's all it was.
An airdrop.
Future tech airdrop, yeah.
I mean, in Family Guy, they just talked about it being the a crash test dummy. Roger was supposed to be a crash test dummy.
Oh, right, yeah. Or American Dad.
What'd I say?
Same thing, Family Guy.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing.
American Dad, where Roger crashes and he thinks, they told him he's this great decider of what happens to humanity. And he's like, please ignore this dead alien. We were using him for a crash test dummy and he didn't die.
Yeah.
They built a ship too good. No, never mind. It's a bad fact. But no, I mean, science is always, obviously to me, extremely fascinating. From goo to how your cells behave with consciousness. And I think that's kind of where that goes back to with that cell thing. With your individual cells having almost a mind of their own. Starting to survive and do things and, how does that happen?
Mm.
You know, they have a nucleus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which generally, if you look at diagrams of cells, just is supposed to be for DNA replication and protection.
Right.
How does a single cell from a lung decide what to do?
Gosh. All those organelles within it have to be communicating somehow, knowing what's
inside the cell.
Inside of the individual cell.
So then what makes up an organelle?
Right. Yeah. Well, you got to keep zooming in.
It's infinitely complex. I know we don't generally care for him too much, but Neil deGrasse Tyson. Not all infinities are the same size.
Okay.
So that's what he's talking about. That's infinitely small.
Right, yeah.
You can keep going down and you'll keep, if you had a powerful enough microscope, you could keep going down to the layer, to the layer, to the layer. There's no such thing as a one thing.
Right.
Whether it's, it was pions, I think it's quarks now.
No, it's Higgs bosons now.
No, that's not, they're not small.
Huh?
I don't think Higgs bosons are small. They're the thread. That ties everything together.
Oh, that's pretty small.
Yeah, but I think it's quarks.
That's even smaller than this. Yeah, quarks are, I from what I remember, because that was the name of the dog on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Quark?
Quark, yeah.
It may be something smaller now, but when I was in school, it was peons.
Mm.
I believe that was the smallest form of.
That's why everyone called me that?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Which I think means. It has some old English word for either peasant.
Probably, like plebeian.
Or like bottom.
Yeah.
Like the bottom of it, which they were saying, it's the bottom of it.
Right, yeah, but turns out there's always more.
Mm-hmm. And then say infinitely big,
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's been this. I mean, what are your thoughts on the cell thing? That one was weird.
The replication or repairing replicate. Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. And it, I think we don't always have the answers to everything. And so it's a cool new discovery to, I guess, be a part of at this time, but to see it in real action happening and not knowing about it. I mean, obviously we weren't taught that in school. So it's,
oh, we didn't talk about cryptids.
Huh? You know? Uh-oh.
Bigfoot. Mothman. I forgot.
The show, everything has to be tie into an animal or it has to be about an animal.
I guess technically that new form of life was That's a cryptid.
It is a cryptid. But, you know, we got to understand what cryptids are. At least everyone listening needs to understand what cryptids are. And then, you know, every episode does revolve around cryptids or at least explain how cryptids come about in our world. And it's not just always some magical thing that people are just happen to see or they're imagining. These things can be real. They can exist. And you got to sometimes you got to dig down and zoom in to the infinite, the infinities of reality, down to the organelles of the single cells to find the answers.
I have been the great and powerful mystery.
And I've been J Clone 56.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the Jade Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye! Bye.
Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, get a home safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.